Techscape on Taking Stock. Brought to you by PwC. Our industry experts can help you unlock the full potential of AI to transform your business safely and responsibly. Visit pwc.ie to learn more.
Yes, as I mentioned in the introduction, Stripe confirmed its biggest ever acquisition this week, a $1 billion deal to buy US crypto platform Bridge, accelerating their move into stablecoins. Well, to look at that issue and also look at the role of cryptocurrency and where it all stands now, I'm joined by Charlie Taylor of the Business Post and Jemima Kelly, who's a columnist with the Financial Times. Jemima and Charlie, you're very welcome to Taking Stock.
Thank you.
Hello there.
Charlie, I'm going to start with you and that deal with the Coulson brothers there. What exactly is a stable coin and why are they getting involved in this now?
Yeah, good questions, one and all. I suppose let's start off, this deal is worth noting. This is by far and away Stripe's biggest ever acquisition. It tends to usually snap up sort of small startups at a relatively low cost and, you know, whose technology it can easily integrate into it. So this marks a significant sea change for them in terms of their acquisition strategy. It's a huge deal. You know, $1.1 billion is massive in terms of, you know, not that they can't afford it, but it still marks a big change in terms of what they're doing. And I think it really seems as though it's in some ways a sort of land grab by them into the move of stable coins. Now, everybody knows what sort of Bitcoin is the most famous sort of cryptocurrency that's around. And as we all know, it has a generally quite a poor reputation. It's seen as being very volatile. It's also been used in sort of scams and in the past, it's been used for sort of dodgy transactions. So it doesn't have the greatest reputation. Whereas stable coins, as the name suggests, offer some much more stability than other crypto. It's assets that are pegged to traditional currency, such as the dollar. So it means that they sort of, it's stable all along is really what it's about. And I think really, if you like, it's becoming sort of the acceptable face of crypto. It's sort of a bridge in between sort of traditional currencies like the dollar and then the more sort of volatile ones like Bitcoin.
Mm. And the Coulsons themselves have kind of changed their position when it comes to dabbling in crypto. I know in 2018, they ended their support really for Bitcoin. So what's changed for them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they have an interesting track record in terms of the fact of like that when they started out, which was 2010, they were a very early supporter of crypto and, you know, seemed to back it all the way and were keen sort of backers of it. But yeah, as you say, 2018, they stopped backing it because they just sort of said, look, it's become more of an asset that's traded rather than a means of exchange. But, you know, so they sort of withdrew from it, but it was only for a short time because even just a couple of years later, they were back in with it, building a team to take advantage of what it said was to build the future of Web3 payments, which are sort of, you know, back embracing crypto, if you like. And I suppose, you know, their move back into it is very much sort of, part of it is just due to the fact that, you know, it's demand from customers. Customers are starting to demand stable coins more. So they obviously want to meet the need of their customers, but also they and many other fintechs are also getting in on the stable coins for issue. You've had like the likes of Revolut that are considering issuing a stable coin, Visa, PayPal. They're all looking at it as something of interest to them. And even if you look beyond that, you know, the wider context is also, you know, we can't look at this, I think, without looking at the US election that's taken place. Is Donald Trump has reversed his position on digital assets. He was very against them. Now he's come out as a big supporter of them, which in turn has led the big tech bros to embrace him and sort of offer their support for him. And, you know, his opponent has not been someone who's publicly been as positive about crypto as Donald Trump, but is seen to be wooing supporters behind closed doors. So I think whichever way the election goes, it looks as though crypto is going to become more mainstream. Mm. And stable coins are very much sort of the acceptable way into embracing that and ever to becoming a reality.
Yeah, and maybe look, their real allure is that they're pegged to traditional currencies and people feel a bit more secure in investing in something like that when there's something tangible there. Jemima, can I bring you in now and we'll come back to stable coins a bit more. But that issue that Charlie has mentioned a couple of times of, you know, the arc of cryptocurrency, if you like, we've come a long way, really, haven't we, from where it started? It's maybe just take us through the trajectory of their journey and where you see it is now. I know you've written a piece quite recently that says crypto is now boring, but that doesn't necessarily make it safe or regulated.
Yeah, thank you. So I guess when Bitcoin was started by this person or group calling themselves Satoshi Nakamoto, we still don't actually know who that is, although there was an HBO documentary recently that did suggest that it was someone, but he's now denied that. But so when it started, it was very much this, the idea was that this was going to be a digital currency and that it was going to be used to pay for things. And the kind of the, its selling point was that it was peer-to-peer digital currency that could be sent across the world without a third party to approve it. And so that really was, you know, some people say that it was never actually intended to be used as a currency, but a lot of people think it was. And that's certainly how it was kind of written up in the white paper in 2009, which is when, you know, it kind of was born out of the financial crisis. So that's kind of taking us right back to the start. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin.
But we don't, sorry, I just want to pick you up on something. We don't even know who started it. Is that
We don't. So it's someone called Satoshi Nakamoto. And there have been various kind of like moments when, for example, Time magazine thought that they found him at one point.
So he's like the Banksy of cryptocurrency. Is it?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, he or she might be dead. There have been all sorts of, as I say, there's been all sorts of kind of theories. There was this guy called Craig Wright, this Australian guy who came out and said that he was Satoshi back in kind of 2016, I want to say, around that time anyway. And then, you know, most people believe that that was a massive lie. And so anyway, there's been all sorts of theories. Peter Todd is the latest one. He's apparently had to go into hiding after this HBO documentary said that he was the creator, because he's saying he's not. It's not clear that he's a computer, mm-hmm. a developer who was known about in the Bitcoin world, but he's always said he wasn't Satoshi. But so it was created by this mysterious person or entity. We don't really know who. And as I say, the idea was that this would be a currency. But as you know, as it started being used, it turned out that actually it was quite a poor currency for a lot of reasons, because it didn't really fulfill any of the things that you would want a currency to do. It didn't really fulfill the criteria. So it didn't have things like stability. It was like very unstable, because you need to have quite a lot of liquidity. In other words, a lot of people have to be using something in order for the price to kind of become stable. Another thing, and so that means that, you know, you might pay for something, you know, for one Bitcoin, and then the next day it's worth double or it's worth half. So you could have waited, you know, so there's no incentive to spend it, because maybe it's going to increase in value. You know, it's a bit like if inflation was suddenly going crazy. It's kind of, it completely skews the incentives around spending. And famously, the first ever Bitcoin transaction was for pizza. I think it was 10,000 Bitcoins that were used to buy two pizzas, which is now like either billions or hundreds of millions. Sorry, I haven't got the maths in front of me, but it's like, you can imagine, mm-hmm. I mean, currently Bitcoin is at like 67,000. So times that by 10,000. So I guess in the hundreds of millions, is that? I can't do it. I can't do the maths on the spot. And so it suddenly became clear, or sorry, not suddenly, it gradually became clear that this wasn't a very, very useful currency. But what it was quite a good way of making money. Mm. And as I say, when it was used, you know, if you had bought a Bitcoin when it was being used to buy two pizzas for $10,000 and held onto it until now, you would have you would have made God knows how many thousands of percent increase in your investment. In, you know, you would have had a huge return on your investment. So anyway, people started to notice, because it was quite unknown at the beginning. And so the more people who came into the market, the more the price went up, because obviously price is determined by demand, supply and demand. And Bitcoin has this quite kind of cleverly controlled supply, actually, that was set up by Satoshi Nakamoto, in which there's, I won't go into the real mechanics of it because it's quite complex, but there's a certain amount of Bitcoins added to the system roughly every 10 minutes. And that amount gets less over time. But again, it's all a bit complex.
But yeah, the principle is it's added to, but it's a diminishing commodity, if you like. But initially, they got very excited about it. It was sort of a closed shop. It was very complex. We won't even go in to the issue of NFTs, which we covered on this show and nearly broke us. But then it was out of favour, it was out of fashion. And back in 2022, we were all kind of saying, look, that's sort of dead and gone. Where is it now?
It's not, it seems to kind of sadly really be neither dead nor gone. And I should say, by the way, that if NFTs almost broke you, that's a good sign. That's a sign that you are, that, you know, of intelligence, I would say, because it does, all of this stuff really does make no sense, in my opinion. I'm quite a hardened skeptic around all of this. And I started off with a very open mind. But essentially, what you're talking about is a string of ones and zeros, you know, a digital kind of, an abstract digital kind of thing that, with nothing, absolutely nothing underneath it, apart from belief. And that criticism is always met with, well, that's the same for fiat-based money. In other words, that's the same for our currency that we use because we're no longer on the gold standard. And that's true. But in those cases, we have a nation state behind them. So our currencies are no longer based on gold, but they are based on
a fungible currency. Charlie, can I bring you back in here just to get your views on that crypto broader issue? And we'll get back to the Coulsons and Stripe in a moment. But you remember and you recall those discussions we had around the NFTs. Where do you see cryptocurrency at? And do you see that this issue, Stripe getting in on this with the stable coins, is a sort of a game changing moment to either reinvent it, reinvigorate it? What do you think?
I think, what we're seeing, I touched on it earlier, crypto, becoming more acceptable, and I don't know about the future, say for Bitcoin or for variations of that, but we're beginning to see crypto in some way, digital assets, if you prefer, becoming more acceptable. I mean, you're even seeing it, the EU is working on a digital euro, which would be, it would just be another way to make payments. The idea is not that it would replace notes and coins, but it would just serve as another alternative way to pay for things. And, there's already preparation being undertaken on that, and the EU's by far and away, not the only ones doing this. I mean, this is being looked at by governments across the world, so we are looking, I think, at some stage, we are going to increasingly see crypto becoming a part of our world, whether we like it or not, And I think, but what it will be is, I think it will be a treading very carefully. There may be something like a digital euro come along in a few years' time that will coexist with, traditional currency, and, that we will adopt slowly but surely, And as I touched on, stablecoins is a sort of a bridge towards that, I think.
Yeah. Jemima, just to bring you back in on the regulation side of the cryptocurrencies as well, the US Securities and Exchange Commission, obviously a huge part of this. Where are these cryptocurrencies now in terms of regulation and listing?
Well, I would just quickly like to push back against what was just said there, because I don't believe that just because these central banks are working on digital, CBDCs, central bank digital currencies, that this is in any way any kind of endorsement or kind of move towards adoption of crypto. We need to separate three different things. One is cryptocurrencies that trade according to the whims of the market. Another one is stable coins, which are tied to the value of existing currencies. And therefore, the only likeness they have to crypto is that they are using the same blockchain technology and they exist outside of kind of regulated entities, although there is work on regulating those. And the third thing is central bank issued digital currencies. So those are three things. A digital euro would be the latter. And to be working on the latter is no endorsement of the first thing, crypto. And in fact, the SEC approving Bitcoin ETFs was also not an endorsement of Bitcoin. It was just that they didn't really have an argument to make. But given that the financial sector did seem to want to be able to have a safer exposure to crypto, and you can understand why, because crypto, the upside of crypto is kind of unlimited, given that it's based on absolutely nothing. all the, if you imagine, like, what is this thing worth? Well, it could be worth anything. If more people get into it, it could keep, and the downside is obviously 100%, but the upside is more than 100%. So it makes sense to allocate potentially 1% of your portfolio if you've got billions of dollars that you're managing. That was why it was accepted. But I just wanted to be clear that I don't think that that therefore means that regulators in the US are kind of saying, are kind of putting a stamp of approval or legitimacy.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. It's just a way of a diversifying portfolios, maybe, and also responding to consumer demand. And basically,
yeah, I think it's worth adding on that as well. You know, just to touch on that, is you know, the US securities regulator, the SEC, has been very hard on, if you like, crypto, you know, and the exchanges that have been, you know, dealing in it. I mean, you know, they're certainly not fans of it, as Jemima touched on there.
Mm. Well, I was just going to say that I think with Trump, you know, things might easily change. And I think that's the reason that we've seen Bitcoin doing quite well in recent weeks, because he has been making so many noises about Bitcoin. Obviously, he's a complete, you know, we don't even need to go into the words that he is, but he is, you know, doesn't seem to have many ideological viewpoints that can't change on anything, really, because he kind of seems to be driven more by things like self-interest. And so clearly, given that there's a huge amount of lobbying money now in crypto, because they've made billions and billions, hundreds of billions of dollars. And so these massive companies are now able to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on lobbying. And so, of course, he's going to say he supports crypto, because that means that he's not only getting money from the industry, he's also getting support and kind of is able to show himself as this kind of tech-savvy kind of president. So I do think that under a Trump presidency, which unfortunately is looking more and more likely, we will probably see the US soften its stance on crypto, particularly because he said he's going to, you know, put in a new SEC chair, and you know, he wants to kind of deregulate all of that.
Finally, wants to take over the Federal Reserve as well. So, why would he stop at regulating Bitcoin? But I think you're right. That's a really salient point, that these tech companies are becoming much more organized and adept at lobbying for regulation. So that's obviously something that's feeding into politics now in a way that it mightn't have done a couple of years ago. Charlie, I want to go back to you for the final word on this and the Coulson brothers. And we talk a little bit about numbers. What are they predicting for this, or what are they likely to do with an investment of 1.1 billion, which is their biggest acquisition? What are they hoping to get back?
Yeah, they haven't said. There's no touch. They haven't even confirmed the figure that's alleged to be the sum that's been paid for Bridge, which is 1.1 billion, according to reports. But what they're definitely looking to do is to continue to grow. I mean, you know, it's really interesting whenever you talk to the Collisons, whenever they're featured in the news, they often kind of talk along the lines of, we're only just getting started, you know, and you can see that, you know, the users processed 1 trillion between them all on Stripe last year, which is equivalent to about 1% of global GDP. But, you know, as they touch on it, it's like online payments, we tend to think of them being very commonplace. Now, their argument is that we're only just beginning in terms of online payments, and that they are their best place to kind of, you know, take advantage of that. You know, so it's very much, it plays into their thing of like, widens their user base. Customers, as I said, are looking to use stable coins more. So that's become a feature of what's happening. So they are there just very much embracing that. They're, I think by buying Bridge, they are very much kind of putting themselves right at the forefront of stable coins.
Well, extraordinary success stories, extraordinary numbers. Before I let you go, Jemima, Kelly, that's a good Irish name. Do you have any Irish connections?
I do indeed. My father was Irish, Dubliner, and I have lots of family still in Dublin, including, do you know the band The Fat Lady Sings?
We do know the band The Fat Lady Sings.
Well, the lead singer is my cousin, Nick Kelly. What a man.
There you go. Well, the connections.
That's my biggest Irish claim to fame.
Excellent.
And it's great. And it's a great one and a great band. Jemima, thank you very much. And Charlie, thank you also for joining me today. That was Charlie Taylor of the Business Post and Jemima Kelly, columnist with the Financial Times.
Thanks so much.